You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and members. I'm not going to say much about underreporting. I think Gareth have already highlighted that. I must just say, I think there was a very positive development over the last 5, 6, even 7 years with the surveys that has been done, the National Victims of Crime Surveys of Statistics South Africa. And I think those reports, which strictly speaking, those surveys is done at a very high cost. It's a lot of money that goes into that. I think it should be used much more effectively by the police, by research organizations, NGOs and institutions, in conjunction, actually in conjunction with the crime stats as such. So I think that is also a very positive development. And unfortunately, we will have underreporting for as long as we live. It is a universal phenomena where the trust in the police is low, you may find very high underreporting levels, and that is also a problem. It's fluctuating all the time. Now, I think more important, and I'll just quickly go through it. I'm not going to spend time. I think General Segakuni and his people are very much aware of this. But there's a lot of places where there can be under-registration of crime. That is a much more serious problem than under-reporting. A police service can only know what is reported to it. But under non-registration of crime, and this can be intentional or unintentional. It can be because people, if I can quickly use two examples, many years ago when the late Minister Tshwete was still there and it was still late Commissioner Salebi, there were a case in the Eastern Cape near Umtata where crimes were registered, CIT robberies, and that actually led to the moratorium on crime stats and the ELOF committee, where cash in transit robberies in Labore was registered where people were using the taxi. And while they were using the taxi, their cash will be stolen from their pocket. And this police officer then reported this as robbery of cash in transit. And actually, there were about 178 in 1 month, and we immediately picked it up. But this shows you that it can be unintentional. That police officer didn't know that this was happening. But then you can have where there's a murder of 14 people, five people in a drive-by shooting, this kind of thing, and only one murder gets registered. That can happen. So it can be intentional, unintentional. Now, Gareth have also referred to this specific issue of underreporting. I think what one must add here is actually that even whatever the crime register must have in place, and whatever crime Statistics South Africa is doing to help the crime register to get to more valid statistics, there is a little bit of time just before a crime get registered where there can still be some things that can happen which may make our crime stats invalid. For example, it's not only a case where people go and report at the police station and they say, "Ach no, no crime happened." I mean, that especially happened in your domestic violence type of crime where a lady goes to a police station after she walked 80 kilometers to the police station in a rural area, and the police then try to convince her that she doesn't have a case, that actually she and the husband should reconcile. The fact of the matter is, you can find it with many other crimes. One of the ones that I think which is rife at the present moment is the one of housebreaking. I have experienced it personally in Pretoria in a townhouse complex where there were in one night 12 clear cases in one week, there were 12 cases of attempted housebreaking where they were tampering with the lock. And all of those were registered as malicious damage to property. All of them were registered as malicious damage to property. And when you go to the CPF, the impli- notifications when you go to the CPF a week or two later, in that area, there was actually only one house breaking. But there should have been 12, because attempts is also very important in operational planning. The fact that people are trying to break in means that next time they may succeed, and that is very important. But in any case, so you can find that even before it gets to the registration, people may convince the victims that the crime didn't occur. Then you can find that the police officer may put it in the register, in the crime register, but don't take it over to the docket. The docket is never open. Then you can have a case where a docket is open, but not all the crimes are listed on the front page of the docket. And then you can have crimes which disappear where this on the front page of the docket is not registered on the system. Now, the fact that there are people at the station now is a very good development. I mean, that was especially a result of the Petros Committee. There's this idea that there is people at the station which must check this on a daily basis, that the crimes which is listed on the docket is registered on CAS, and that also that reconcile the registers with the dockets, because otherwise there may be crimes that disappear there. I think this I don't even actually have to talk about, because it was explained very well by General Sekukuni, the whole fact that it must roll up your stations, your stats at stations are rolling up to cluster, from cluster to provincial and eventually your national stats. I think one thing which we must just, and I may return to that one, is that he also explained about the draw that for quarterly stats, the stats is released, and then later on by the end of the year, actually, even if quarterly stats were released in the meantime, there's a redraw of stats. That methodology is sound. I think there's nothing wrong with it. The main issue should just be, maybe one should emphasize, that the redraws by the end of the year must be on the same, it must be as close as possible to the same date. Otherwise, if you redraw the 1 year after a month, the other one you redraw after 2 months, the next year you redraw after 3 months, you may find that your trend is increasing because it was not freezed on or frozen on the same time. But I think they are aware of that, and I'm sure that's not a major problem. Now, the next one is to ensure the validity of crime stats. And I just want to say something about the Auken Committee. Before we had the Auken Committee, when I arrived at the police in 95, crime stats were in a, I can't describe it, but it was in a terrible state. It was actually, there were no control over the validity and the integrity of. Now, when the Auken Committee came in 97, that was one of our main issues that we had to look at. And on the Auken Committee, there were three overseas experts. It was Mr. Haldego from the French Gendarme, Ms. Pate from the Belgium Gendarme, and then Mr. Lewis of the Home Office. You'll remember that in Britain, I don't know today, but in those days at least, and I think it's still the same, because it's not a national police service. They keep their stats through the Home Office. And the fact of the matter is all of these experts, plus other academics that we had internally, and everybody agreed on one thing. And that is the reason why it was so chaotic in, say, the middle 90s, was because people at station level didn't realize that stats is important. They just thought stats is something that you've put onto CAS, or people in Pretoria will deduct it from CAS, the crime administration system, and then they will keep themselves busy there in Pretoria with stats, and they will sometimes come here to Cape Town to report the stats to Parliament, and well, you know, you don't have to worry too much about that. We can't use it at station. So the main finding, I think, and I think that was one of the most important findings ever, is that people at station level, if they realize that stats is actually crime intelligence, because the modern concept of crime intelligence, 85 to 95% of your crime intelligence is your stats and your analysis of your stats. That is what we call intelligence-led and problem-orientated policing. Now, in that regard, if people realize at station and they have the tools to analyze the stats at station and they have the people to interpret the stats at station level, then your integrity of your stats immediately increase. And this flow up in the system and the people using it at a more strategic national level or provincial level will have better stats. And that, I think that was one of the main, and we implemented that. Then we had checking from above. I'm certain that continue even today, checking of above, from head office. But I think, and I'm very sure after General Sekekuni's presentation now, is that independent checking at station level, that there are now people at station level checking on a daily basis that crimes were registered, the counts and the categories of crime were registered correctly. Now, on D, you will see minimize the use of crime statistics as a measure of performance. Now, the whole time that I was at the South African Police Service, and Gareth have referred to that one, there was always in top management the idea that it is because we measure the police performance against crime stats. That is why people start to manipulate stats at station level. Because they are in trouble there, they start to manipulate. But one can minimize, but you can never, that's my view, in any case. There's no way that the police, which line function is the prevention and the detection of crime, which I mean that's the biggest part of the police job, can never get away from using crime stats to ultimately measure a certain performance. I mean, you can't say we have no performance measurement on crime, because there's certain crimes, if the police doesn't make a difference there, then there's something wrong. The strategy is wrong, the motivation is wrong, something is wrong. So you can minimize, but you can't totally cut it out on certain crimes. On certain other crimes, like maybe the sexual offenses and so on, one has to look. There you can minimize it even more. And then keep the distance between crime stats and communication and strategic management. People referred to the 1915-16 report. I also want to refer to the 1915-16 crime report. I think it's an excellent report. It's the best report since 10-11. The previous four reports were actually just reports telling us crime is going up and it's going down, and actually try to project a picture that we have a very rosy picture of crime. The real explanatory one was the 1516, and I think it has lots to do of removing crime stats or bringing crime stats back to its home, the home being with the crime register now. It was with intelligence, now it's with the crime register. I think if I've got a lack of time, I think I should just go to those recommendations. I'll skip this, I'll skip the history a bit, and I think all the members have got that. And I will go to maybe this one here. In my time, and I think now the time is right, that what should happen is there's a lot that can still be done. In 95, crime reports were very much thumb-suck reports, description of crime stats, and then we brought things like docket analysis, interviews, and all of that to enrich the crime stats and to help to interpret the crime stats. But I think which still have to be done is, for example, multivariate analysis of crime figures, socioeconomic factors, victim survey results, and police resource data, to bring the whole lot together and analyze how these things correlate. For example, there's a thing in when we have a high figure of child rape. Now, there's a theory which say that where you have overcrowding housing conditions is where you find most of your child rape. There's some relationship there, but it's untested. It's untested. Now, by bringing together all of these figures, the socioeconomic figures, housing figures, police figures, and all of that, you can test that relationship. I think that would be a good thing. Also, the station GIS. There is a station GIS, but one can also use the station GIS to globally explain crime. For example, there's a view that when you have green belts, green areas in a residential area, there is always a lot of housebreaking next to that green belts. Now, that can be tested by rolling up. Actually, you can do it in Pretoria by looking at your GIS at station level and look at 300 stations plus, and you can then do that deduction from there. It is possible. It needs manpower. It needs resources, human resources, and trained human resources that can do it. And then surveys amongst victims of carjacking. Now, the police are in a very good position. And that is where, for example, they can interview victims, which researchers like the ISS, a research organization, the Human Science Research Council, independent researchers, everybody, can't do. But the police are in that position. We did it on a very small scale, but we didn't have the human resources to continue with it in the northeast sub-area of Johannesburg in the late 90s. And we found we could explain carjacking, and we found quite a lot of operational things in that. I'm not going to reason why we didn't achieve that while I was there, and maybe it's still not achieved, because there is the main problem is human resources. I'm certain that General Sekakuni experienced exactly the same problem, a lack of proper human resources to do this kind of analysis. This is not... You can't just do it overnight. All right, now I want to go and I'm going to skip this one because I've already said it, and that is that the latest report, the latest crime report, the 15-16 one, is totally different from the previous three or four reports, where there were no explanation, where there were only crime trends going up and down. I think that one is also explained. I want to go to this one. This one is very important. The essence of analysis, the essence of understanding crime, is that you take things down to the smallest components and then put it back together to understand how it works. Now, for the last few years especially, the police were concentrating on big types of crime, big categories, big groups of crime, which is the types of crime. They will tell you 1.5% reduction in contact crime. Contact crime is about, just quickly, about plus minus 600,000. In that 600,000, in that basket, you find murder, attempted murder, sexual offenses, your two kinds of assault, serious and not so serious, and then you find a common robbery and aggravated robbery. Now, that 1.5% decrease tells us absolutely nothing. It is worth nothing. Because hidden in that, you may have a 4% decrease in assault in 400,000 of those 600,000 cases, which actually gives you that 1.5% decrease. But your aggravated robbery is increasing by 10%. And then your murder is also increasing with quite a percentage. Now, half of those murders, at least half, well, let's make it less. Let's make it 40% of the murders are preventable murders. It's vigilantism. It's murder as a result of robbery, which then brings you vigilantism. It's xenophobic murders. It's homophobic murders. It's a whole lot of murders which can be prevented. Now, also, when it comes to robbery, I mean, robbery aggravated is one of those which can be prevented. Now, let me go to the even this quite excellent report, which is the 15-16 report. In that report, no mention is made of street public robbery. It's not there. It is not there. There is one sentence, and that sentence sort of tried to explain why it is not. It says, robbery aggravated increased. But that is all the others included. It's not there. It's not in the tables. Now, this is a very important crime. It may be not a very important crime for rich people. For rich people, hijackings is very important. For rich people, house robbery is very important. But for the poor people of Cape Town, which have to move, and Johannesburg or wherever, which have to move from Khayelitsha in the morning here to the city to come and work even in this building, those people have to travel by taxi and have to travel by train and maybe use both of them and even bus. And that is where those street and public robberies occur. It is exactly there if you analyze it down to station level. And that, I think, shows that we have to do something about the categories and the sub, especially the subcategories of crime. The categories are legally based, but at least in the subcategories, we have to try at least on the more policeable crimes to break it down further and further. I think I've said more than I've said that. Then also, one more, maybe one last issue. And that is that we should definitely look at the data that is given to the public at station level. I hear always that there's always the reference that people must go to their CPFs. They must join their CPFs. They must join their structures there at the local level. But when we look at the briefings, when we look at the police briefings to the CPFs, and I have done quite a lot of that looking at the minutes of the Khayelitsha, during the Khayelitsha Commission where I gave evidence. I mean, and I attended my own CPF meetings quite regularly. And what I find there is sometimes I just, for the next three meetings, I don't attend because I'm wasting a good Monday evening once a month. You go there, and I even receive weekly reports. And what you find is that the briefing is basically in street so-and-so, there was one robbery, house robbery. In street so-and-so, there were two house breakings. In street so-and-so, on an early Tuesday morning, there were one theft of motor vehicle. And in Khayelitsha, some of the minutes even look worse. There you find, after the HERA meeting, they will say, three people were raped in Khayelitsha. Now that, I can't see that the CPF or a community or any community organization can actually use that trying to assist the police in crime prevention. I just don't see how that can work. So I think that's the other point I wanted to highlight. And then maybe the last one just is to say, I know in all these commissions or committees that I were part of, the Auckland Committee, the Yellow Committee, and then later on the Petros Committee, the question we always ask, should we take crime stats away from the police and produce it somewhere independently? My view on that is it can't happen. That is my personal view. It can't happen because your problem is how are you going to get valid stats from a police station level to such, say for example, let's use one Stats South Africa as a department. I've got the highest respect for Stats South Africa. I think they do a very good job. But how are you going to get the stats from there, from the station, to, if you have problems in the police, getting the stats to a national level, to one office and to one system? I also think in all the committees, the answer were the same. South Africa can't afford a parallel system of statistics, two, operational and a strategic one. And then also the last one was that South Africa have got a national police service. We don't have a police service which are shattered through the country, and now they sent the questionnaire. In the United States, 6 monthly, a station sent a list of crimes to the FBI, which then compile their consolidated crime stats. And in Britain, the same occur there. I think, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I think I will stop there.
Thank you very much, Dr. de Kock, and all the other presenters. We go now to questions. The first three from my side. To Stats SA, and it's also to SAPS, you've indicated in your environmental analysis of the institution, you look at the staff and the skills, and maybe General Zulu, your team that you have in National Office, is it enough? What is the skills levels? And do you think that you need more support from the Portfolio Committee to ensure that you've got the team to assist? SAPS General, on page 12 of your presentation, you indicated reported crime is discussed at the Station Crime Combating Forum on a daily basis. Now, is that happening across South Africa? And what measurement do you have in place, electronically and station-wise, to ensure that it happens? Because my big question is, what is the role of the station commander in supervising that? That is just a question I have, and we need to get maybe a response with regard to that. Then, in the briefing document that was made available to the Portfolio Committee members, there's a reference to the Khayelitsha Commission. For instance, an instance where SAPS members said, well, they're not going to open a docket regarding a crime, and that's an issue. I mean, constituency complaints, we get that a lot. Go to the station, we also see it with a lot of DVA cases, and relatively with the issue now of violence against women. I mean, there is an effort to kind of manage complaints out of the CAC and say, well, solve it in other ways. What assurance can the police management give us that those cases will be actually be recorded and dockets will be opened? How do we address the issue of, you know, maybe a DVA case must be solved between the complainant and the perpetrator? Can we get maybe, what is your game plan?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a number of questions and one or two comments, so can I just work through all of those? Many of them are quite short and punchy because it's requesting clarification. Okay, I'm going to start with questions that stemmed from the SAPS presentation. Just to get an explanation in terms of slide 3, the Major General mentioned about the use of the CAS and the ICDMS system. Can I just ask if there is any difference between CAS and ICDMS, because it's presented as CAS/ICDMS, which suggests it may be two things that are related, or it's one thing, and I want to understand if it's one system, why do we use both terms or both acronyms? My second question from slide 5, where he outlined the four elements that go into the writing of a statement. I just wasn't clear on what the call it the conceptual differences between bullet point 1 and 3, where he mentioned that the one element is the principle of legality, if the incident is an offence, and then the element of unlawfulness if the conduct contravenes a statutory requirement or rule. That to me seemed to be the same thing, so I wanted to understand what the distinction between those two elements, if they've been separated in that way, because they both speak to conduct that is a criminal offence that is unlawful. So I might have missed something there. And then my other questions is, so it was reaffirmed again today that SAPS does in fact record disaggregated crime categories or subcategories. I remember the issue came up when we were looking at the issue of farm attacks and farm murders, where SAPS does tag subcategories around farm murders and rape within sexual offences. So my question is, why does SAPS not make that disaggregated data publicly available in their stats reporting? Because as we've heard, that disaggregation makes the data much more useful to look at particular trends and particular sort of dynamics. And with the explanation of why that's the case, can I make the request that they please start doing so? You have the raw data. It is tagged in ICDMS with those, as you see up there, the difference between rape, attempted rape, and so on. Can you please just start doing that, you know, and make it publicly available? My next question linked to that is just to ask, is there any tracing and recording in that process of hate crimes or prejudice-motivated crimes? So concerning LGBT people, foreign nationals, do you have the ability to track that particular picture or that layer of the picture? I just saw a media advisory a bit earlier showing that there's going to be a victim of crimes, a victim of crime survey report being released by Stats SA. And I wanted to find out if are those victim surveys and that kind of data taken into account when the SAPS is analyzing the stats and to inform planning. My next question, Chair, is to ask, because one of the proposals I think I've made before and a couple of times is that real-time crime stats, ideally on a weekly basis, would be useful to be made available at police stations. I think Dr. De Kock also covered that. So that you can have those localized and customized responses to crime, both by the police and by other safety stakeholders in the community. So is there any reason why we can't start doing that, why we aren't currently doing that, making those real-time crime stats available at station level, ideally on a weekly basis? And then there was the issue that came up about difficulties with comparing, about boundaries, where crime stats can only really be aggregated at a provincial level because station boundaries don't match other systems. So I'd like to find out if has there been or are there currently any discussions about boundary alignments across departments. The issue has come up before, Chair, we know, in terms of misalignment between police precinct boundaries and magisterial district boundaries, so that it's difficult to track the flow of cases from the SAPS to when it lands in the courts and sort of what that flow looks like. So, you know, if you were able to compare data as it relates to wards, as it relates to precincts, as it relates to, you know, health districts, whatever the case might be. Is that discussion underway to try and get that harmonization in place? I would assume the JCPS cluster might be one place to initiate that conversation. And then finally, my final point, Che, and it's more of a comment, because it stuck out when it was mentioned in the last presentation, this issue of the use of station GIS to look at crime patterns, and there was the example of the effects of green belts on housebreaking being highlighted. I remember during the Eastern Cape Committee oversight visits, when we were at the Kwazakhele police station, and the team at the station put up on the projector a map of the police precincts with the sectors, and they mentioned how the one sector had a particular profile or spike around, I think it was house robberies actually, And I asked the question because I could see there was a railway running past that particular sector, and there was, I think, marshland or sort of open space next to it. And I asked, does your crime intelligence look at the possible correlation between that topography or that terrain and the particular profile of the crimes in this sector? And they said no. That's a gap, but it's also an opportunity for the staff to improve their performance by looking at that kind of information.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Molobachi, you've got 15 minutes. I'm just joking. Microphone.
Thanks, Chair. Issues of data integrity discussed at provincial crime combating forums and station crime combating forums meetings. My next one, tell us about the unfounded cases excluded from the national crime statistics. My next one is, if a crime in a particular province is incorrectly recorded, do you have a way of picking it up long before the announcement of this, the crime stat, or will it just go unnoticed? My next one is, what happens in an event the first statement does not contain the four elements mentioned on slide 5? My other one is, do station managers understand the importance of field work for crime information management officers? That's for SAPS. My one question for Stats SA is on, there is this ratio that is used to say one policeman for, I'm not sure of that figure, 100 or 1,000 community members. My question is it sufficient or do you see some problem in it? My next one is for Dr. de Kock, and somehow it also goes to Garrett. You mentioned the under-reporting time and again. And now my question is, how do you think, in your view, how do you think this can be really addressed? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Molobachi. Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. My question is, are you on track to produce the official statistics for the 2016-17 financial year? My second question, please indicate whether the release of quarterly crime statistics had any impact on your planning and management of crime trends across the country and in specific areas. My third question, did the station managers understand the functions of CIMAC and are CIMAC products utilized? My question again, how many CIMAC, CIMAC officers completed the CIAC learning program and CIMAC course? My last question, will you please indicate whether the reporting line of CIMAC officials are clear to national or station level? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mula. Honourable Ramatlakhani.
Thank you, Chair. I will be brief. The first one with the police, General Skukuni, for me, the one central concern I have, which is the question. But firstly, let me just say that I think the presentation, both of the police as well as the stats, shows that a lot lots of work has been done, and there's been lots of collaboration around issue of stats and ensuring that the stats are authentic in terms of there are clear stats that are not challengeable. I think we must commend you for that. But a question I have in terms of the stats, in terms of the capacity, is actually the capacity at the various point where the capturing takes place. Have you developed sufficient capacity with that particular area of work? Because that area of work is the one that can give you good results or not give you good results. For an example, if the feeding and the capturing of the data, I understood you to say that there is always a signature, somebody countersigning that he or she accept that this is not been done. But I'm talking about the role at the feeding point, the capacity that you've already developed in that. Are you happy with that kind of capacity? And what is that capacity? And how big it is? But otherwise, the rest, I think, then I will leave that question there, because I think that's a central question for me. But I think, Chair, I must also say that with the presentation, and the phases where the phases of the interaction self-assessment now getting into, what's the time frame in terms of making sure that the SEPs will be able to finalize their own self-assessment in terms of the presentation that I've seen from the status SA in terms of process? Then I jump to ask the doctor. You mentioned, Dr. de Kock, the fact that you almost taken an issue with the categorization of crime because of the problem you raise as a subcategory that are problematic. But because we're talking, say, I mean, we're talking to you, but you don't provide an answer to it. You raise it, you problematize it as a problem in terms of subcategory, as what should be done, what is not been done. But the question in terms of what we want to see in terms of what is it, what is a remedy for it? Because surely you know that type of incident, you call them incident. There are multiple incidents. Some of which may not quite make up a category on their own because of the thousand multiple of incident that happens. But somehow you need to narrow them into a category that makes sense in terms of the frequency of it. But you have not answered that question as to what is the remedy for that. So you just left that hanging. Then Garrett, your one I left for last. You made a big issue about scientificness and non-scientificness, that this thing will never be scientific, you know. And then you went on to explain the problem, and the problem that you have spoken about is the fact that there are unreported cases. There's a lot of unreported cases there. But my problem with that line may suggest that we're never going to have the stats, because the stats is made up of incidents that are reported. Now, if incident is not reported, what's the authority to say there are 1 million of them that are unreported? Where do you find it? And how, at what point? Because if it's not reported, it remains an perception that it happens, isn't it? Now, can you now work out a stats that is reasonable that give an indication of people who have come forward to report, why would you pour complete water in the entire process to say that it, you know, it's never going to happen this way because of this, and the reason is unreported? If it was not reported, does it exist to a point that it must find its way in the stats to be reported on? And what would you say is that figure? So, just the problem I'm having with that, because it's also not providing any solution. It pours water on some perception that there are thousands and thousands of unreported, but if it was not reported, it definitely won't make it into the report or to be counted as a stats. So that's for me the central question I want. So what should we do with respect to that issue in order to make sure that at least we arrive closer to acceptable steps in your view? I don't have a real question for Statistics South Africa, because they explain the process, and I think that I accept that process. That is what they have to do going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would appreciate an elaboration on the role of the Crime Register and whether the office has sufficient capacity to conduct regular checks on the accuracy of the crime statistics. I actually wanted to latch on the issue of capacity, which actually was raised before by the last speaker. And my second question actually has to do with the correlationship between crime recording and successful prosecution. In what happens to a crime that actually is recorded but is unsuccessful in the prosecution? Does it remain on the records, or what happens to it? The last one has to do with a statement which actually was made by Dr. De Kock, where he actually said crime statistics is crime intelligence. I would appreciate an elaboration and an unpacking of that to actually have a clear understanding of what it actually really means, the import of that statement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Markey, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question or clarification, capturing of data at the station level, what is needed there, what qualifications are needed for the capturer, and we have enough of those people? What training do they need to have in order to do the capturing down at the station level? My second question would be on the method that is used. The general said in some countries something is recorded in an incident book, or is recorded as an incident, then it's investigated before it can be recorded as a case, or before it can receive a case number or so. But in South Africa, irrespective of whether you are sure or not, he said everything is recorded. So I just want to understand, is there any advantage of either method? If you use this one or you don't use that one, what would be the difference between the two, or the advantages thereof? Or is it only because that is the law in South Africa, there's some act that says that? And then my second question would be on, or just an understanding, or the general said when he was talking about snapshots and so on, that the case is a life system. I just want to understand, as a life system or something of that nature, as different from, I just didn't understand the snapshot part of it and the life of the case. And the crime statistics user guide. I was just thinking to myself, whom would this guide be intended for? And at what level? Just thinking about my village where I come from. Or would somebody be sitting under a tree looking at statistic user guide for what? For what purpose? Maybe some business person up there might be. So if I could understand, or is it done for us here in Parliament or something of that nature? And then the crime statistics can never be scientific. Or crime statistics by police. That is exactly what was said. Just to follow up on what Honorable Ramatlakane said. If a crime has not been reported, and then you blame the police about it, and you keep on howling about there being a lot of crime in this area, but nobody is reporting. Is that not simply a speculation? Oh, what are the police expected? How do they prevent crime that they don't know about? That's what I'm saying. I was thinking aloud to myself. Then how are the police expected to deal with a situation like that? If we could get some suggestions. I'm being blamed that there's crime and you are not doing anything about it, but I don't know about it. Nobody told me about it. So scientifically, what do we do in such a situation? If I could get some explanation on that. But I would definitely agree that stats at a local level would be very effective. Local, we can even, maybe the lower level being the cluster. At least people must know, the police must know which areas and what type of, at a local level. Maybe I'll link that with my first question on the people who capture the data at that level. Are they public service or are they themselves police? Do they understand or is it simply a situation of crunching numbers into some computer or so? Thank you, Chairperson.
Is that you? Thank you, Honourable Market, Honourable Mabija.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to be assisted in order to understand.
Just the microphone, sorry, Honourable Member.
I just want to be assisted in order to understand the word unfounded after I have given an example. Say I go to, for instance, I go to police station Joyce. His name is Joyce. When I arrive there, I find a police officer. I say, I have a problem. Somebody phoned me using a private number. He says he's a police at Johannes Police Station. And I have been to Johannes Police Station and there's no such a person. Now I'm here to report this. I need a case number, a case. I want to open a docket here so that this thing is official. And as an officer, I say, you have no case here. Go back, come back if you receive such a phone again. And maybe, most unfortunately, at my place, there's house breaking, or there is this thing, I get killed. Then how do you, where do you place me? Because I've been to a police station and I was told there's no case and I'm dead. I don't know if you get the gist of what I'm saying. I want clarification on that issue because that thing is so common. People are sent back because officers believe there's no case there. And that thing demoralizes community members. That's why some of the things are not reported. Because it's like when you go to report something, you must be having information in your hands. It's then that you get assistance from the officers. Just that, that's what I want to be clarified on, so that I'm able to assist during my constituency work.
Thank you, honourable members. Let's go through the responses. We will start with SAPS, then Stats SA, Mr. Newman, and Dr. Kok. Thank you. Let's go.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be responding on the issue of capacity in terms of research. Yes, definitely, when it goes to capacity, it's a challenge that we're having as a new unit, as the Chairperson and the honorable members will know that we're just a new unit and we're still building the capacity. However, what we are utilizing now, we are trying to source to supplement the capacity by enlisting some interns. We're running an internship program to beef up the capacity. But it's not only about the researchers, but you also need money, sometimes the finance, because if we cannot be able to do what we are doing, we need to outsource the work to the people outside, but we'd also need money on that particular one, because this is the approach that we are also following, where we feel that we cannot take everything. Some of that, we are just taking it out for people to do the research for us and make the findings. But what we do, we provide the specifications and what the research intent in terms of our expectations. We are critically in need of the capacity currently, but we are building the capacity as we go further.
Maybe just a more direct response. What is the total number of staff you've got currently in that unit working with the issue of statistics within SAPS?
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the people who are doing actual research, including myself, because I also participate in research, we're only 14. And then the support in terms of the administration and stuff like that, they are 13. All in all, we're 27.
Thanks, Chair. I reported crime discussed at station level. Yes, we have the CCF on a daily basis where the crime register people have to provide reports to the station management so they can analyze those reports. But as you know, Chair, in terms of the new Operation Command Center process, those people, those crime registered people at the station report to the cluster also, where they analyze not only the station but the cluster and develop plans both for the, because there's more capacity at the cluster, also for the cluster operations, but also to give station specific tasks out of those analyzed reports itself. So the reports are analyzed by cell, which includes the crime register, intelligence, crime prevention, and support people. They sit together every morning and then analyze the crime and give a written intelligence packages to the operational people in terms of this concept so they can implement. And tomorrow they must report back what did they achieve in terms of those operational. So we are slowly implementing that process now in all provinces after we finalize the pilot in P, which was very successful. We're just waiting for the final validation from our research Dr. Zulu there, which we hope to get before the end of the month. And just tomorrow, I think.
From a head office perspective and oversight, I mean, for instance, at your level, if you want to know what is happening, if Nongoma Police Station had such a meeting on a Monday, you will be able to access it immediately.
See, our systems don't allow, but when we do our visits in terms of intervention, it's one of the things in terms of our computer assessment tool, we check in terms of those things. So at the stations, we're specifically busy with that. That is a practice we are building. And together with General Sekukuni, we're building a new practice in terms of this. Especially at the cluster level, there was no post for that at the cluster level. We then, through all this process, have ensured that the National Commission and the National Forum has agreed we'll have someone at the cluster level to ensure that the coordination of the stations, 7-8 stations, which gives you a better picture than just a station picture. But the crime in the station level doesn't give you a picture, especially around bigger and more priority crimes that normally goes over station area itself. So we implemented, and the idea from which we're busy with now, to have a report which, when it's typed in at the station, it automatically goes right to the national office in terms of operational centers. So we, General Henkel and them are busy with that report together with strategic management and OD. So we hope to have, before the end of financial year, they have a report which, when they put those information at any level, we can draw the report automatically and not phone someone or write a letter. The report will then automatically generate upward around this issue. So we are busy to try to get that in place itself. The issue of Khayelitsha people refused, we have concerns that issue instruction around that no one must be refused to lay any charge itself. I mean, it's for us to decide whether it meets the elements of a crime. If it doesn't meet the element, we have to go back to the person who laid the charge and explain to them why it doesn't meet the four elements of a crime and therefore cannot be registered as a crime itself. I did say we're quite far with our SMS system, which we also have to come give feedback at some stage, but where we're going to give reports automatically. Once we work on the CAS system, it automatically gives a SMS to the complainant itself and their family members if necessary based on the crime. So we're quite far with that process from MI to ensure the researcher and detective services to give feedback to the complainants and others. So they would know every stage, whether we would withdraw in, whether it's unfounded, we have to explain it. They can then phone the investigating officer and then do further clarity on the matter itself. Slide 3, use of CAS. I think you want to explain that.
Thank you, Chair. The CAS system, I think it started around 1995, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Dikok, my attest to that one. This system was made for registering, as it says, the CAS is the crime administrative system, where you punch in the incident, what happened, it gives you a case number. That case number, it's when it goes to be counted in the crimes that depending on how many counts we get inside that incident. The CDIMS is something similar to it. It's just an improvement of CAS. The CAS before, you couldn't scan the A1 statement. We only depended on the A111. So with the CDIMS, you can scan. When you view on the screen there, you can get all the details of the case docket itself, of which the case was not doing. It depended only on
what has been typed. But with the CDMS, we can get everything on it. It's a fully developed system, but it's implemented in phases. It's currently been implemented in phases. That's why we are still using both the systems. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Brigadier.
Thanks, Chair. Just to add, I think it's the O, what we used to call the e-docket. So that is the name. And why are we still using both? Because at some stations we have not implemented it yet. So we're only using the CAS at some stations. At other stations, as we roll it out, the CAS system will automatically then phase out once we've implemented the system at all stations itself.
Just a follow-up on the
Can I just double check with the general? So e-docket refers to ICTMS. Okay. I just want to link in my head. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, General Cruiser.
Category, subcategories, why does SEPS not make it available?
Initially, remember that when we compiled crime stats, we were using legally defined crimes. But then the legally defined crimes were not sufficient for the men in the street to be able to understand the crime patterns that are happening in their localities. So we went down and broke those further because, like as Dr. De Kock has explained, legally when a person is hijacked, the court will only charge the person with robbery with aggravating circumstances. But for the layman in the street, he might not necessarily have an understanding of what is robbery with aggravating circumstances. So to make crime statistics to be easily comprehensible, we then broke those into subcategories, whereby we broke down the robbery with aggravating circumstances into six crimes, which is your carjacking, robbery residential, robbery non-residential, and we call those trio crimes. We further broke it down into cash in transit, truck hijacking, and bank robbery. So these categories are only designed to enhance the understanding for the user of crime statistics. When he or she reads the report of crime statistics, he should be in a position to conceptualize what is happening without necessarily going into the legal jargon that the person will only be charged at the court level. And I guess there was also a question that was asked around an unfounded case, which I will try and answer it in conjunction with what was asked by Honorable Mark. I said all crimes that are reported to the police in South Africa are registered. Then after the registration, then there is the investigation to determine whether such a particular crime did indeed take place or not. Once it is established that a particular case had indeed taken place, then the detectives will then continue investigating. Now, you have another incident whereby a person comes to report a crime to the police. And I used an example of stock theft, whereby livestock from Farmer X have wandered into the land of Farmer Y. So Farmer X couldn't establish at that point where his stock is. Suspecting that it might have been stolen, he goes to the police station, he opens a case of stock theft. The police won't turn him or her away. They will open a case of stock theft. Then the detectives will go in and investigate. Only when they investigate, they find that actually that stock was not stolen. It just, you know, moved from Farmer X's field to Farmer Y. They find that particular livestock, they return it to Farmer X. So such a case, it will then be closed off as unfounded because investigation has revealed that no crime has actually taken place. It was just a stock or whatever that has just one that off. Another scenario that might happen in this instance is issues whereby a gentleman, you know, he goes and sleeps somewhere, the wife asks, where have you been? Then he comes up with a story that my car was hijacked. Then they open a case. Then the detectives investigate and what have you. Maybe they even contact tracker companies. They find that that car was all night parked at Sheraton Hotel. Then when they confront the person who has laid the case, he then spills the beans that, no, actually, I did this because I was afraid, or maybe I was trying to protect my marriage. Then such a case will then be closed off as unfounded and defeating the ends of justice be open. So that's how a case becomes closed off as unfounded. Now, on the issue where I talked about input or registered, I said every crime that is brought to the attention of the police, it is registered. That is the South African way of doing things. Then once it is registered, there will be some investigation, and it might be determined, or it might be undetected. Irrespective of whether a case is closed off as undetected, it will still make part of the crime statistics. But in the UK, what is happening is when a person reports a crime, it is only recorded in a register. Then the investigation takes place. Once the investigation determines that a crime has indeed taken place, it is then registered. It is first recorded, investigated, and then registered. But in South Africa, we first register, investigate, and then we will see the manner of closure as the case is being investigated. Which of the two methods?
Yeah, I've saw two hands, but let's just the general complete that, then I'll give...
In case of the two methods, which one is more advantageous over the other? I believe that it also depends on the maturity of the climate in which the system is operating. In the UK, I believe that the trust in their statistics is more or less more at an advanced level than what it is in South Africa. And if it were to be adopted in South Africa, and also the use of crime statistics as a measure of police performance, it might open up a can of worms that we might not even be anticipating at this current stage. So I believe that let's keep the way in which we are doing things. Register, investigate, and then at the end when we come to the conclusion whether it was undetected or unfounded, then we go with that, rather than first report it, keep it in the register, and then investigate before you register. So I believe that the way in which we are doing it for now, until we reach that certain level of maturity, we need to keep it as we are going now.
Thank you, General. Maybe at this stage, I'm just, Mr. Newham just asked to also contribute, and then Honourable Mula follow up on that issue. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I just need to catch a flight, so I need to leave, and I thought I'd just quickly answer the question. One question I was pretty much asked, or two questions. The issue on scientific, whether crime stats are a scientific representation of the crime levels is not, was not meant to be a controversial statement. It's certainly not a criticism of the police. This is an international phenomenon. I think the solution we have, we've got Stats SA does an annual victims of crime survey. So, for example, if there are 20,000 household robberies reported to the South African Police Service, and Stats SA says that there's a 60% reporting rate, then we could then have a secondary figure saying that the actual figure is probably in the region of 32,000 a year. Now, we know that there's two figures. There's one, the reporting rate that's been reported to the police, and then there's another rate of which is the likely actual incidences. So it's not about whether the police are good or bad or anything like that. It's simply about saying, is are we seeing an increase in reporting or decrease in reporting? So we know how many resources we have, and it helps us to think, do we need more police officers, and so forth. I think the other issue is just related to that, about how do you improve reporting. I mean, that's something the police can obviously encourage people to report crimes and make sure that officers at station levels realize that it is important to open dockets where there's any reasonable prospect that a crime has been committed. And don't punish police stations if, you know, rape goes up, for example. as I said, look at the specific categories that are more policeable and say we're going to only assess your performance on robberies, for example, but we're not going to assess your performance against rape because we will look at your response to the crime report, not whether there's an increase or decrease in the actual crime reported to you. So we'll look at whether you actually investigated it and what was the success of the investigation would be one way to increase reporting rates. And then thirdly, just the last point, I think it is important that the crime statistics are a measure overall. If you look at the big numbers, the 2.1 million crimes that are reported, it's not something the police can do solve on their own. And I think maybe one way of slowly shifting people's mindsets, because most South Africans, according to the Victims of Crime Survey, do recognize that the reason why crime happens is not because of a failure of policing. It happens because of a range of other factors. There's unemployment, there's poverty, there's drug use, alcohol use. That's what's driving a lot of these crimes taking place. So if the crime stats were going to be released once a year as an annual release, it would be good to not only have the Minister of Police and the police sitting there. It would probably be also good to have other members of the JCPS there. It might also be good to have the Minister of Social Development to talk about the early childhood development programs and violence prevention programs that they're putting in place to deal with, say, murder and some of the assaults and gender-based violence. It might be good to have the Department of Basic Education there to then respond as saying what they're doing about school violence, bullying, and those factors that also contribute to violent crime. You can do the same thing with health and some other departments. So it's just a way of shifting the attitude or the idea that if it's a crime problem, it's only policing. If it's a crime problem, it's a whole of government approach, and also it's not just government. It's every one of us have a role to play. So, and I think that's the kind of how government releases the statistics over time might be worth reflecting on to get people to shift their thinking about what can we all do to deal with this problem and leave the police to deal with the more repeat violent, serious offenders, gangsters, organized criminals, which is what they should be focusing on, and what can other people in departments do to make sure that children look after, that women are not raped, that men behave responsibly and don't take drugs. You know, that's the kind of thing that we need to start shifting our mindset. And as long as the police are the only department standing there presenting the total South Africa's crime picture, the mind shift is not going to really change. It's always going to be, if there's a problem with this crime, it's the police's fault. And I think we need to move away from that. So I hope that answers some of the questions, and I'm sorry I have to leave you, but thank you very much for the invitation.
Thank you for your participation. We'll see you in the future, in the nearby future. Honourable Mula, you have a specific follow-up.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. General, I want to ask a question. What if, like this one that I'm going to speak about is the truth, when a person goes to a police station and opens a case, and the police who opens a case to him or her, she gave her a wrong case number. Where does that case fall to?
Thank you, General.
I think I'd rather leave that to General Cruiser to respond to on the wrong case.
Handing those dockets.
General, the system generates a case number automatically when you lay a complaint. So unless there's an error when they wrote, but the system, even when they register a crime, you get a case number automatically on your phone. We give you a phone number. Already we have that in place. If you register a crime, it gives you the case number automatically because it's generated from the system. We don't generate the case number. When you put in a complaint, 4 of March 2017, then generates the fourth crime on this day. Automatically generates a case number itself. So the member doesn't generate the case number. The system, and if you got a phone, it automatically gives you an SMS with that case number. So I don't know how someone can get a wrong case number. I'm not sure.
I see two hands. Is it Honourable Bridge? I'll follow up on the same issue.
More or less the same. Say you go there to the police station and you are told to go back after lodging a complaint. Nothing is done. You don't have a case number. You have nothing. You are sent home. If it happens again, then come back. Where does that fall? Do you have something to detect such an activity? Because you find I don't understand how you operate on that one. Can you just clarify me so that I understand?
on the Mumula, on the sanctuary, okay, and then we can go back to General Cruiser?
Yes, Chairperson. Yes, General Cruz. They did. She gave her the wrong case number. When the person phoned me, I was here in Parliament, and I said to her, will you please send me that case number? When I check it, it's wrong. I went there at Betal Police Station and check. There was no case number that is the same as that one. It was not, and I went straight to the station commander, and they said she must come back and open another case.
Right, let's get clarity on that, and then we deal with the other responses.
It's just on face value, Chair, I don't have the evidence. It looks like it's a case of someone didn't want to register where they want to keep their stats down. On face value, I don't know. If someone got a case number that doesn't exist, it means they gave them something which is false. Chair, if someone is not given a case, there is the commander of the CSC, is the first line of call which we must go to. After that, there's a station commissioner. We also have our complaints line, which is there for those things, so we can investigate the thing thoroughly itself, where members are doing those sort of things itself. So I think it's critical that if someone goes there not satisfied with the service of the officer behind the desk, they must ask for the CSC commander who's responsible for those members, if not the station commissioner. There's also, as I say, we have a complaint line which is on all the stations that's advertised there to then contact our complaints line either through phone-in or by writing us an email itself.
But maybe I think, General, maybe the issue Honourable Mabija raised, the practical issue. A member goes to the station with a complaint and the officer there says, come back the next day or the cash system is not ready to register it, come back. That delay issue. Can you maybe just comment on that?
Chair, we are offline from time to time. Stations are offline. I mean, it's a given, all companies. You go to the bank, the same thing happens sometimes. So all I'm saying is that the recourse, if you're not getting the prerequisite service from the member behind, the constable, the sergeant, whoever's behind the desk, is to us, even if he says it's offline, I think it's important that he then speaks to the CSC commander. Because, you see, they can't generate their own number. The system, if it's offline, they can't give you a cash number because the system generates a cash number, not the individual. Because then we'll have problems if individuals generate it itself. So that's the line of...
Just a moment. I think before we go, to SAPS, the Deputy Director General of Stats, SA, just raises that. You're welcome, sir. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There were a few questions that came to say, but two specifically, but I'll touch them with other comments that may assist us in the debate. Firstly, the number of police members that you may have per 100,000 cannot be determined by SA. It differs from country to country. All over the world, we see countries starting from about 120 members, 120 members of the police force to 100,000, to about 450, depending on the weight they put and the kind of crime they experience. Some developed nations may not have a lot of crime, but they want to have a lot of police visibility, and as we may see now in Europe, there's more police visibility. But there are recommendations that get put from time to time, but that's not a matter, because the same must remain independent all the time. There was another question as regards the budgets, whether it's enough, or the resources that our colleagues at SAPS, we worked with them and discussed with them the whole issue of the structure, but it's from the content side. We only can comment on the kind of content and methodologists and statisticians that they may need. But to a particular level, the internal workings relate to how the SAPS can work. But it's true, yes, and these are comments. I'll put four comments quickly. It's true, yes, that crime statistics from the side of the police will always be facing challenges all over the whole world. But it's better to have them than not to have them. It's better to have a dashboard when you are driving a car than not to have a dashboard at all. You would have more serious problems if we didn't know. So the trends and the issues that we are dealing with help us as a nation to lift up those issues that require improvement. Because the more the police appear here, the more questions are being raised, the more they seek improvements. The second issue is status A and subserve, and coming from Dr. De Kock raised this matter, coming from the days of the moratorium. The moratorium came because there were problems. From those days, we started working together actively to come out of the woods. And if you ask me, there are a lot of methodological improvements that we are seeing. Actually, we talk a lot more than we used to do in the 90s. And there are a lot of benefits. But official statistics is very interesting. There is integrity. Integrity means independence on the one side. So technically, I think we raised when we're presenting that we are talking of self-assessment now. There's time that we will have assessment, independent assessment. That independent assessment has other issues. Once we come to those issues, Chair, the biggest question we'll have to answer as a country is, do we have to continue with the official side of statistics being released by the police, or they can deal with management issues, because they have the strength and the capacity. They record incidents every day, because it's like dealing with audits. Imagine government departments were doing their own audits and there was no auditor general. I think there would be serious problems. So that independence, the integrity of any figures is based on the independence of the person who conducts such responsibilities. But even if Stats SA were to take over, and which we may decide one day, let's assume we were to take over crime statistics and we report them as official statistics coming from the Statistician General, we would rely on SAPS to assist us with the administrative records, because they sit with incidents every day, like teachers sit with incidents of absence and presence of children, and nurses sit with developments of health in a neighborhood. So those things play a critical role going forward. But if you ask me, Chair, it's a way that we could look going forward. But for now, I see a lot of improvements. There are frustrations, I must admit. If I'm an individual and I go to the police station and I'm sent back, it becomes very frustrating. But for those of us who look at numbers, we have come to have the veracity of the numbers produced by SAPS have improved greatly and still need to continue to be improved. And I think we will continue working together to take the process forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Let's go to the other SAPS responses before we go to Dr. De Kock.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, the issue of trace and recording of hate crimes, no, we don't check that in our system. But we can do docket analysis when it's necessary. Those things are occurring in a certain area. We then do docket analysis to determine if those things are in there. Dr. Zulu will deal with the issue of victims of crime reports.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the question, the utilization of the reports on the victims of crime survey, yes, we utilize that report. In fact, usually when you look at the report, it gives you a high level of the findings. But what we do, it will say that the community has no trust on the police. But we go, as we further do research, what are the root causes of those trusts? Then it's when we go in depth now to find to address the issue of why the community has no trust in the police. So we do further research. This is one of the baseline documents that we utilize to do our further research and to address the problem. Not only being utilized also by the research, strategic management in terms of setting the priorities of the organization, those are the issues also that we look at to make sure that we improving the service in terms of the customer satisfaction. As we've talked now, there's a research that is running, which is on the customer satisfaction, which is based on the statistics that was, the survey that was, that was issued. So based on that, we say how can we then enhance the findings in order for us as the South African Police Service to address the root causes
of what why there were such findings in the survey. That is how you tell us the report.
Thanks, General. Rabi will just deal with the issue of boundaries.
Honourable Chair and members of the committee, the issue raised about the alignment of boundaries, SAPS, police precinct boundaries, and the boundaries or the ministerial boundaries. There was a task team established that is currently still working, and we are dealing with this province by province. We started with Gauteng, and then we moved to the north Limpopo province. I'm not exactly sure where we currently are. We can give you feedback on that. But the problems that we've identified or the challenges in the initial implementation of the project, while it will never be possible to exactly align the boundaries, whether we as far as possible, what we do is we sit with the Department of Justice and SAPS, and we try as far as possible to align the boundaries. But sometimes, in some instances, it was basically not possible to do the exact alignment. We must keep in mind that we do not have the same type of infrastructure. For instance, in terms of your courts that we have available, your lower courts and the magisterial courts and higher courts, the numbers that they have available and the areas that they serve is not exactly equal to what we have in the South African Police Service in terms of our infrastructure. We found, for instance, that in some instances, if we apply the magisterial boundaries that were already proclamated at the time, we will cut a police precinct exactly in half next to the police station, where people staying around about 300 meters from a police station will now have to go to a different police station that is 30 kilometers from where they stay. So if needed, Chairperson, we can provide you with a progress report on where we stand, but just on that matter, we cannot have a 100% alignment due to the practical problems.
Thank you. Honourable Mabele, follow-up on that issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. If I may, just a very quick interjection, is that because the current challenge is that exact dilemma that the Minister-General mentions already does occur in some instances. I know, for example, in Stellenbosch, there's a section of Stellenbosch that falls under a precinct where the station is in Paarl. So those people in Stellenbosch have been told by the police station in Stellenbosch, no, you don't fall under our precinct, you must go to Paarl. And I don't know how you resolve, because it's already happening. So how do we try to address that issue?
Right, thank you. Let's go. First, that's South Africa and the other responders. We're just running a bit out of time, so I just want that we try and finish this round. Thank you, DGG.
Two quick comments, Honourable Chair. Firstly, is the whole issue of the geographic space in South Africa is not a criminal justice system one. It's challenging. We see it a lot. I mean, service delivery, for example. You have Department of Health giving numbers. You have ESCOM giving numbers, Telkom giving numbers. Now, when people call and they want assistance from the police, they choose whatever number is on the wall on that particular day, and the police spend the whole time, especially in rural areas. In the cities, it's better because you have streets. So I think we need an issue to deal with the whole issue of geography and geographical alignment. From the side of state, say, in our legislative reform, we are addressing this issue, but it's only part of it. But I think the matter of geography is a very serious one in our country. The second point relates to the victims of crime. The benefit of the victims of crime is that we take 30,000 households in the society. It gives us a national and a provincial figure, but we can't estimate at a sub-provincial level. The benefit of that is that we are able to pick up crimes that were never reported at police stations, because we are talking to the victims themselves. But one of the biggest challenges is social crime, especially crime occurring amongst members of the same family or in the neighborhood. And we find it difficult even when we interview the people.
because we want to talk to the person themselves. We say anyone aged 15 years and above, we want to talk to them. And there are times when you find that the elders want to sit there and they want to guide this youngster. And we're saying, no, no, we want to talk to the victim themselves because we sample them. And once they are sampled, that household is sampled, we have to follow through and talk to everyone. But it's very helpful, and we have found use from our colleagues from SAPS. They do use that. Thanks.
For that input, yes. SAPS, further responses?
Thanks, Chair. The use of GIS, yes, we do use GIS at all levels. Chair, we find that it needs to be upgraded. What we have done now in terms of those, we've taken Google Earth and we planted it on top of the GIS, which gives our people better operational ability to use the system. And we've now downloaded it at all our OCC centers so that they don't only use, they have the GIS which CAS generates, and then we put Google Earth on top of it, which is done by our technical people. So we have movability in terms of using the system much better, and I think we are getting better results around those issues itself.
James Kikuni, data integrity, provincial. Data integrity at province.
The issue of data integrity, actually it started at the station level, because the ideal is that you have a SIMEC person sitting in each and every police station. After a case has been recorded on the docket, then the station commander peruses it. Then after that, he hands it over to the case operator who captures it on the system. Then the SIMEC person will come in and peruse whether the charges that have been registered are correct, the crime has been correctly classified, and then they will then have a discussion with the station commander or at the station crime combating forum meeting, which is a meeting that takes place on a daily basis. Then the cluster crime combating forum normally sits on a weekly basis. So the envisaged OCC concept will also have a person from the crime registrar environment sitting at the cluster level, which will be able to undertake similar function. And at the national level, we also have our people sampling a number of stations and going to those particular stations and actually verifying what is captured on the CAS and compare it with what is captured on the docket itself. And a similar exercise is also undertaken at the provincial level. So there is a quality checking at every phase in terms of the collection. At the station level, you have the SIMEC person. At the cluster, you still have those quality checks taking place. At the provincial level, it's also taking place. But at the national level, we normally try to make sure that it coincides with the quarterly release of the crime statistics. So when we envisage that we are going to be publishing crime statistics at a certain point in time, then we'll then send people into the field to go and verify that the data that has been captured on the docket corresponds with what has been captured on the CAS system. And normally reports will be then written and shared with the managers, etc., for actions to be taken against such issues.
Thanks, Chair. Do they do field work? Yes, Chair. In terms of what we've tasked now, that when we look at the stats, we ask the SIMEC guys at the station to really visit the crime scenes and things, and when they report in terms of the intelligence cell, where intelligence and other people sit, they bring not only the statistical information, but also what type of things are happening at those crime scenes. So that's part of the report, which now we work together with General Sekuni to develop a table for them, so every person at the station has a clear guideline in terms of what they must do in terms of crime. We've now worked on that with the OCC, so every station, SIMEC will know exactly what they must do in terms of crime. Just to go while we're on that, Chair, I think it's the issue which Dr. de Kock raised is that the threats and the patterns are intelligence. We don't agree with that position. That's why we removed that from intelligence itself, because that's what intelligence was giving us, going to a computer and telling us where the crimes are taking place and what type of crimes. That is information. We are saying that when we sit with that group, we task intelligence, if there's house breaking, what is the modus operandi? Who's doing the house breaking? Where are they coming from? Where are they selling the goods? They must go get
That's what the investigation was. Because that thing is generally from a system, and that is the crime register's job to tell us this is the pattern, this is the threats. Intelligence must go deeper than that and give us who is doing it so we can arrest. Because the only way to stop those things from happening is to arrest the people. So we have separated the intelligence, one of the role players of region that, and get tasks from that threats and patterns to go and operationalize those things and come with packages with people, cars being used, all those sort of things. And we find we're getting much better access than to let them just say that's an intelligence report. We think that is a crime register report. It's information from the system and the analysis. They must do deeper analysis and give us things which we can operationalize. And that's what we see as intelligence. They're not just these reports itself.
You know, just one issue I just put on the record. So you're saying at all 1,144 stations in the country, there's a SIMAC officer.
I don't think he can answer. Are they there, all the things?
I can say almost at all, around 80% of the station, we do have a SIMAC person in that particular station. We have undertaken an audit and then we tried to, you know, equitably allocate resources across all the stations. But yes, we've been moving towards making sure that at each and every station, there should be, especially those stations that, you know, you have some stations that are reporting only 30 crimes per year and stuff like that. So we don't want to have a SIMAC at those kind of stations. But those that are above a certain threshold, we want to make sure that there is a SIMAC person at that particular station. So we are working towards that, and I can safely say around 80% of the station would have a SIMAC person.
So the rest of the 20% responsibility is the station commander, the cluster.
Okay. So we're trying to ensure that every cluster has a person. And where there's no station, some stations means they have two people. So we have said where we don't have a cluster person, one person must move to cluster so that all the gaps are covered while we, because there's a principle agreement by management to fill all those posts itself. So while we don't have it full in the process, they, we've allocated the functions to cluster to look at the stations. I think you must just deal with the capacities, are they all trained and all those things while you're on it. And what training do they do?
In terms of the SIMAC training that has been provided, I would not necessarily have the actual numbers of how many personnel were trained off the cuff. But then when we did the audit, when we were trying to equitably, you know, move people around at the stations and stuff, one of the things that we had asked in that particular questionnaire was what the type of training that the person has received. So they completed those forms, and I believe that maybe in a week or two, or maybe even next week, I can be in a position that to tell you that.
Yeah, General, let's get in the writing rather than speculate. That we can just get a sense of what is the actual level of training and where you do need to do interventions. Let's get the other responses.
The reporting lines are directly through the crime register itself, right up to General Sekukuni's office itself. So they correlate from that side right down itself. Enough capacity. I think we've done that. The issue of crime and prosecution. How do we fare in terms of prosecution based on the number of crime registered?
I think the issue was what happens in the event that the crime has been recorded, and then the prosecutor comes to a different conclusion. In all those cases, what we say that irrespective of the manner of closure, all crimes will be registered and be made part of crime statistics. It's only those cases that the detectives come to the conclusion that it is an unfounded. Whether a case has been closed off as undetected, it will still form part of the crime statistics. The independent assessment, quite honestly, it's a lengthy and time-consuming exercise, because from the 135-odd indicators that are in the SASCAF, we have to decipher and pick those that are applicable to SAPs. And once we have done that, we have to go back to the data quality assessment team and deliberate on whether this indicator should have been included, whether it should not have been included, and it takes quite some deliberation to come to the finalized set, with which we will then be assessed on. But once that process has been done, then we can't always, you know, assign ourselves scores if we have not put in place the prerequisites that needs to be put for us to allocate ourselves a score of 4. And once we have done that, we still have to go back to them and discuss, have you given yourself a 4 objectively, or are you just trying to get official status? And again, it takes a lot of engagement, etc., etc. In all honesty, I can say maybe 9 months to a year's time, we can be in a position to complete the self-assessment, because the process that normally follows the self-assessment is much more quicker than the self-assessment process itself.
Chair, does stats have an impact? I think yes. I think the biggest purpose of stats is operational tool for us to use in terms of what operational strategies we put in place around. Example, for instance, trio crimes has been a problem. We have to develop a specific strategy and plan to deal with it itself. Where are the crimes taking place? What is the modus operandi? These are all the things we get from stats. And I think the stations and clusters understand that based on that, they develop the operational plans, which we're now saying all those operational plans must be in writing and not just verbal operational plans. So you can then tomorrow come back and say what you executed and what your successes is, and do you have to adjust your plans itself. So yes, I think it is having an impact in terms of what we are doing itself. Capacity is the same. Is there enough? I think we spoke to that. Snapshot, can you deal with this snapshot?
When we were explaining, we said that CAS is a live system. That it means that cases are registered on a continuous basis. But now, when you want to have an idea in terms of how was the performance on a monthly basis or on a quarterly basis, you need to take a snapshot of the live system as at a particular point in time, like what Dr. De Kock was mentioning. In fact, when we were engaging with TMS, we actually mentioned to them that normally we would prefer if they draw us a snapshot of the monthly statistics 14 days after the end of the reference period, so that we had allowed all those changes to be in a position to take place. So now once that snapshot has been taken, it is archived and stored on the SAPS 6. But the system that registers continues registering. And on a monthly basis, we will then take similar snapshot. Because if you take a snapshot at the end of month one, you then keep it and maybe you make it available to the public. Then you take another snapshot when the system has updated. You'll find that the statistics that you have drawn for month one is no longer the same as when you draw at the end of month two for month one. So you will have those discrepancies, and you would have questions being asked that you came here last year, you told us that for month of January you had 50 murders. Now you come here this year, you tell us now that the month of January we had 55 murders. So we want to make sure that at least we compare same periods, statistics drawn at the same period of time, so that they can be a comparable in terms of the time on which they were drawn, and they compare equal reference period, but without necessarily hampering the continuous registration that still needs to take place on the CAS system.
Yeah, I think we've covered all the questions. If there isn't, they can.
I
think we've covered everything.
Thank you, General. Yes, we've got literally 5 minutes. Dr. De Kock, thank you.
Yeah, I was trying to answer 5 minutes.
Microphone, please. Microphone. Thank you.
On the under-reporting, as I've said actually while I was presenting.
Sorry, you just need to
put the mic.
Okay. On the under-reporting, actually, as I've said during the presentation, that's a universal phenomena. You will find it all over the world, in all countries, and you can't do much about it. The only thing that you can do is to monitor it through victims of crime surveys. which is being done in a very scientific fashion by Stats South Africa. That's the basic that you can do. And you must always, the people who work with the crime stats, must always make it clear that what they work with is reported crime, and then refer to what is the measurement of the underreporting. The link the two, that's the best you can do. One must just remember that we must also look at those crime surveys, which is done at a very high cost, to see what is the reasons for underreporting. And one of the reasons, one of the main reasons is people feel they've reported this in the past to the police and nothing was done about it. I've referred to what happens there in my complex where I live. People now, when those things happen and it's still occurring, they just say, well, it's a waste to phone the police. We're not going to waste our time anymore. And that is the problem. Now, in that complex, it's old people. They won't do anything. But in a place like Ayelitsha, where there's younger people, you may find that the next step is vigilantism, which have increased in this country from virtually zero a few years ago to 10% of our murders. That is quite a chunk of our murders. Then when it comes to the subcategories of crime, yeah, that's a passion for me. Because, and the remedy, sir, unfortunately, is quite easy. We have subcategories when it comes to robbery aggravated. For some other reason, the police don't use one of those subcategories, which is actually a very important one, because that's the one that also generates things like vigilantism, according to the Khayelitsha Commission inquiry. Now, we must just look at subcategories for murder, and we must also look at subcategories for rape within the sexual offences sphere, because that's about 80% of your sexual offences. And I think we have to look. And then General Sekukuni referred to subcategories to explain to the public better. That's not the reason why we have subcategories. That's one of the, it would be very nice to explain to the public. But subcategories are there for operational purposes. There's a massive difference between a strategy to prevent carjackings versus a strategy to prevent street robberies. It's two different kettle of fish. And the same applies to gang rape versus other kinds of rape. And so I can continue, and the same with murder. Then the last one, which I would have liked to spend more time on, because especially now that General Kruse has referred to the fact that he doesn't agree with me, unfortunately, that doesn't convince me. Crimes, I'm not saying crime statistics, but crime statistics is the basis for crime intelligence. Actually, just a bit later, he referred to that. He said no operations are being planned without statistics. But it's not the statistics as such. When you open a docket, it is registered automatically on GIS. It gives you automatically the position and the time of that crime. Also, behind that spot on the map at a specific time is a whole range of information. There's statements. There's modus operandi information. There's a whole lot of information if those things were done properly in the first place. If you analyze that through hotspot analysis, matrix analysis, crime linkage analysis, where you link modus operandi, and then you can identify even potential groups which are operating in that area, in that station, or over that station boundaries, like carjacking groups. We have done it. You can identify and say there's five groups. Group A have this modus operandi. Group B have got this modus operandi. Group C have got that modus operandi. And you can then hand it over to your collectors. Your collectors now comes in, because now they have got something to work on. Here we have got a group B. Group B, we even know some names. Now they can start to go and collect. And there I don't want to go, because I think that's a mandate of a different committee, but go with undercover operations and those kind of things. So for me, and I've done quite a bit of work on that, and especially since I retired, and I'm also part of an international group in that regard. But crime statistics or the reporting of crime, which is then visualized in crime statistics and a spatial pattern, that is actually the basis not only of prevention, it is the basis of prevention, it is the basis of collection, and it is actually also important for detection, because when we arrest a carjacker on the spot, we can now go back and compare all the dockets which were opened in this area for the last 2-3 months on GIS, actually on BI or whatever the new system is called, and we can link and say this hijacker, in this suspect, in all probability is linked to 36 cases. So when we go to court, we can even make out a good reason not to give bail. But I will stop my answer there.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Thank you to the delegations of SAPS, Stats SA Civil Society for today's meeting. I think there is indeed progress with regard to the improvement of the stats. We again also highlight the important role of Stats SA, and we're looking forward to the next 12 months to ensure that we move to the self-evaluation phase. It's going to be critical. I think from the committee side, we will also have to look to further support for the research division of SAPS. It's a very important division, and if you want to move forward in terms of modern policing, digital policing, the research section should be strengthened. They must have the necessary capacity, so that's maybe a discussion we can take forward when we look at the third and fourth quarter reports. What will we need? But I think it's also essential that we get an update on the skills levels and also assurance that those stations that are not covered in terms of the specific officials, that the clusters are indeed dealing with that. So we also will need a thorough report on those stations that are not covered currently with the specific officials going forward. So I want to thank everybody and also the independent researcher and ISS for their contribution. I think this is a discussion we're going to continue with the release of the next round of statistics going toward the end of the year. Maybe just again remind members, next week we're not going to meet on Tuesday due to the fact that there's going to be a plenary from 10 o'clock for the adoption of all committee reports until the afternoon. And next Wednesday we're going to meet at 9 o'clock. IPAT must come with the Section 9 reports as well as the referrals that we gave to them. They must give us feedback. And at 11:30, we will have the Acting National Commissioner as well as the Divisional Commissioners on the Bloemfontein matter. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.